You've asked me here to tell you about my neighbors and my friends, to talk about the who and what, the where and how and when. But I won't give you anything you don't already know. But if you'd like, I'll sing that list of songs before I go. Let me sing you a song about the people that I love, the poets and philosophers, the workers and the wanderers, the ones who walk the picket lines, who dare to stand and fight, and the ones who hold their babies close, rock them through the night. Well, you say it's un-American to do the things I do. Well, I sing for justice, liberty, and civil rights, it's true. Well, I say it's un-American to ask me how I vote, how I pray, or what I believe, but here's a song I wrote. Let me sing you a song about the people that I love, poets and philosophers, workers and the wanderers, ones who walk the picket lines, who dare to stand and fight, and the ones who hold their babies close and rock them through the night. Send me to prison, I guess that's the way it'll be. 'Cause I won't give you fodder for your paranoid machine. If the price of my silence is shackles, well then, fellas, take me away. For I will live to sing again, rise with a brand new day. Let me sing you a song about the people that I love, the poets and philosophers, the workers and the wanderers, the ones who walk the picket lines, who dare to stand and fight, and the ones who hold their babies close, rock them through the night. Da 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 da. La da 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 da. Let me sing you a song about the people that I love, poets and philosophers, the workers and the wanderers, the ones who walk the picket lines, who dare to stand and fight, and the ones who hold their babies close and rock them through the night. Yes, the ones who hold their babies close and rock them through the night.
That's Chicago singer-songwriter Joe Jenks with Let Me Sing You a Song, his tribute to Pete Seeger from his great new album, Poets, Philosophers, Workers and Wanderers. Now, Joe Jenks has built a music career around a fabulous tenor voice and a reputation for well-crafted songs that speak to a human experience fraught with challenge and injustice, yet also offering hope for a brighter future. We caught up with Joe Jenks on tour to chat about the new album. How are you doing today, Joe?
I'm doing well, Jen. Thanks so much for having me on Folk Roots Radio.
Great to talk to you today. I'm really enjoying the new album and looking forward to getting into that with you. But I thought, as we started off with your tribute song to Pete Seeger, and his testimony before the House Committee on Un-American Activities. Why don't I get you to talk a little bit about Pete Seeger and what he means to you as a musician?
You know, Pete was a very early and consequential influence in my life. I'm the youngest of seven children in my family of origin, and I had the whole of my older siblings' record collections at my fingertips, and, you know, everything from, you know, British acid rock to, you know, Vivaldi's Four Seasons to big band era music to, you know, ABBA to, you know, folk singers and anything you could imagine I had at my fingertips. But when I was 8 years old, my sister came home with a present for me from college. And she gave me an album that was Pete Seeger and Arlo Guthrie live at Carnegie Hall. And it was a record that changed the direction of my life, because I suddenly had this understanding, I think at a very young age through those songs, that humanity was this immense ocean and that music was a vessel I could sail out into that ocean to explore it. And Pete really brought stories of people from all over the world into my living room. And I could lay on the floor and listen to those records. And I never would have imagined as a child that I would grow up to know Pete or call him friend and mentor. But that's really what happened. I met Pete several times in the late 90s, and I would say earnestly became friends with him around 2001. He had an influence on my career and on what I chose to sing about and how I chose to conduct myself professionally, as well as, you know, just being an early childhood inspiration. So Pete really, his music affected me deeply. And on the morning that he died, I really wanted to honor him and honor a moment in his life that was sometimes overlooked, but was to me one of the most consequential moments in his public life, when he refused to surrender to a bunch of bullies that were, you know, trying to corner him and make him give testimony against other people. And he stood up and said, "No, I won't do that. You know, I don't really understand the nature of the things you're accusing me of, but I can tell you that I'm a singer and I travel all over the world and I sing songs that serve to lessen the distance between people. As for these other accusations, I really don't know how to speak to them, but I brought my banjo with me today. And if you'd let me sing you a song, I think you would understand what my music is about and that it's not so dangerous as you seem to think it is." And they declined his generous offer, but I thought that was a really profound moment, because he stood up to a room full of bullies with absolute dignity. And he used the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which guarantees freedom of speech, as his defense, saying, "I've done nothing wrong but exercise my constitutional rights." And many people who were called before Congress in the 1950s used the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which says that a person is not required to give testimony if by doing so they may incriminate themselves. And he thought that was folly, because he was absolutely filled with the conviction that he had done nothing wrong. So he when asked, "Are you using the Fifth Amendment, Mr. Seeger?" he said, "No, I'm pleading the First Amendment." And off they went. So I really wanted to honor that specific moment of courage in his life, because I think it defined the next 40 years of his life.
Was that the reason you decided to make this song the first track on the new album?
Indeed it was. The album was released on May Day, on May 1st, which is International Workers' Solidarity Day, Workers' Memorial Day. And Pete Seeger's birthday is May 3rd. And so I really wanted to honor those things. And as I got into it, you know, there's a line in the chorus of the song that says, the top of it says, "Let me sing you a song about the people that I love, the poets, philosophers, the workers, and the wanderers." And as I was assembling this body of material and trying to figure out what I was going to call the album, what I was going to call the CD, I realized that idea, poets, philosophers, workers, and wanderers, really seemed to sum up all of the different narratives that were present in the CD, and that all of these songs were telling a story, each in their own way.
So let's talk about the new album itself. As you mentioned, it is poets, philosophers, workers, and wanderers. I noticed when I was looking through the liner notes, and I got to say, I love the packaging of this new album. You know, that one of the things that we miss in this digital age is, if you're not actually getting the CD version of an album like this, you miss out on quite a lot. But I noticed that the songs that you've collected have been written over a period of time, and I wanted to give you a chance just to talk about how you pulled the songs together that made it into the final collection.
Well, certainly over the I went 8 years in between solo records, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. But as I was pulling this together, I was really pulling, in some ways, not just the cream of the crop from my songwriting over the last 8 years, but the songs that to me felt like they linked into a common theme of narrative and storytelling. And one of the things that I have aspired to do in my career as a songwriter is to use songwriting as a tool for sort of an alternative form of journalism, if you will, to use songwriting as a means of telling stories about the world around me and people that I encounter in that world around me. And so there's 10 original songs on this record, and there's 4 songs written by friends of mine, one of whom is a wonderful Canadian singer-songwriter, John Brooks from Toronto. And then I also took some words written well before World War One by Ralph Chaplin, Solidarity Forever, but I wrote new music to it. I wanted to contemporize it a little bit, and I'm dual U.S.-Irish citizen, so a hornpipe or a jig is usually not far away from me. And so I took those words to Solidarity Forever from 1906 or 1907, when Ralph wrote them, and created a new melody that I called Joe Hill's Hornpipe. And I debuted that piece at the 100th anniversary of Joe Hill's execution out in Salt Lake City in 2015. And so I knew that needed to be a part of this project as well. It really is just a project that's driven by the narratives of the stories, and it's just this collection of portraits that hang in their own way. And I'm totally with you about people who download records and don't get the packaging. I'm a sucker for the analog experience, for flipping through a book where the old album sheets that you had to fold out and read lyrics. And, for me, one of the joys is still with vinyl is that it requires our participation. We have to get up every 18 to 21 minutes and turn the record over, and it invites us still into a process of participation. Just streaming something online, or racking up 100 songs in your iTunes folder and playing them doesn't. There's something about the analog experience that I'm still a kind of a sucker for. So as long as people will buy CDs and vinyl, I'll still be creating music and putting it out in that form, because it's just, to me, it's such a richer experience.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I get into, as a radio person, I get into conflict about I want the music quick, and sometimes getting it digitally really works that way. But it is nice, as you say, to sit down and have the information. I like to read the lyrics, and I like to know who played on an album. We will get to who plays on this album shortly, but I'd like to take a break with another song from the album. I'd like to play one piece at a time, because this is you mentioned how important narrative is, telling the stories of these different songs. This is a song that obviously I think means a lot to you, and talks about a very important issue. And that, of course, is the issue of PTSD with people in the military. Talk about this song, and then we'll play it.
I am the songwriter in residence for a program in Spokane, Washington, called Warriors Heart to Art. And Warriors Heart to Art is an amazing organization that uses poetry and visual art and songwriting and storytelling to give veterans an opportunity to share their story, not, with any specific overt, sort of counseling purpose per se, but just knowing the value of storytelling as part of releasing an experience. And so for several years, I've been privileged to do some songwriting, both with and for veterans. And this song came out of one of the retreats, and the veterans just shared with me thoughts and ideas and experiences, and then gave me permission to take those and amalgamate them into a common thread of narrative in this song. And it's an honor anytime somebody else entrusts you with their story.
Let's play that just now. This is Joe Jenks from the album Poets, Philosophers, Workers and Wanderers, and this is One Piece at a Time. And you're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Chan Hall.
Hoping for start, trying to find my way. A little bit of rebellion mixed with adventure far away. A family tradition to honor and to serve. The call of duty, now I'm down to my last nerve. Does anybody see me? Does anybody know what I've been through? Some folks gave their lives all at once, but I've given up my life one piece at a time. I had a job, I did it well, tried to trust the chain of command. What in the world was I thinking? Now I walk among the damned. Living on the edge of life and death, I know it takes its toll. The loss of innocence, no stability, no control. Does anybody see me? Anybody know what I've been through? Some folks gave their lives all at once, but I've given up my life one piece at a time. Where thy second guess my choices, woulda, coulda, shoulda all the time. But on sleepless nights that doesn't help to find a reason. Picking up the pieces, honoring the dead. Not much here I understand, and there's a war inside my head. But I am not expendable, I'm still living with the pain. There are ways that I survive, but I'm dying every day. Does anybody see me? Does anybody know what I've been through? Some folks gave their lives all at once, but I've given up my life one piece at a time. That the future holds more power than the past. I reach with forgiveness for a new life I hope will last. So put a candle in the window, help me see I'm not alone. Though I have changed, I need to know I'm finally welcome home. Does anybody see me? Anybody know what I've been through? Step by step and day by day I find I'm taking back my life one piece at a time. Does anybody see me? Does anybody know what I've been through? Step by step and day by day I find I'm taking back my life. Yes, I'm taking back my life. I'm taking back my life one piece at a time. One piece at a time.
That's Joe Jenks with One Piece at a Time from his new album. It's entitled Poets, Philosophers, Workers and Wanderers. And Joe Jenks is our special guest on Folk Roots Radio today. He's on the road at the moment, but is able to spare a little time to chat about the album. What I'd like to do at this point, Joe, is talk about who plays on this. Because, you know, one of the things I love about talking to people like yourself is how passionate you are about the craft of creating a record, you know. And funny, we were talking about vinyl before, but when I look at a CD like this and I read all the information, you can see an incredible amount of effort went into not just writing the songs, but actually getting in the studio together with the right people to create the songs that end up on the final album. So tell us a little bit about who joined you on this one.
You know, an amazing team of musicians came together to help me make this record. You know, it really was kind of a community barn raising. And starting with Charlie Pilzer, who was the lead engineer on the project, and also I invited to be co-producer on the project because his contributions really exceeded engineering. He really helped a great deal in wrangling, in particular, the string and the horn arrangements into something that served the album. You know, and then there's some great singers and great players. John Carroll on keyboards, Jim Robison on bass, Cheryl Prashker on percussion. And then Issa Barnwell, who sang Sweet Honey in the Rock for more than 30 years, Tret Fury, Edie Carey. There's a wonderful group, Harpeth Rising, from the States that helped me out a lot with the string arrangements. My niece, Grace Jenks, helped out with the horn. She's a wonderful French horn player. And my friend Reggie Harris was singing on here. And so there's yeah, it's just a wonderful group of people that came together and offered to lend their time and their talents to help me realize a very particular vision I had about this record, which I wouldn't go so far as to say it's as much of a concept album as something like Days of Future Past by the Moody Blues or, you know, some of those sort of classic concept albums. But it really, I really had a certain sense that I wanted there to be a very particular musical narrative running through, not just a lyrical narrative. And so, you know, different musicians came in and helped me kind of stitch the quilt of these songs together into a cohesive blanket.
I always wonder, you know, when you reel off the names of the people that play on it, and you know, you say, "Well, that's wonderful how that all happened." But I imagine it must have taken time, you know, thinking about particular songs, particular people's availability to actually get everybody together to record. How long did that actually take?
I was working on this record on and off for 2.5 years, and I normally would aspire not to take quite so long to make a record. But, you know, this was interspersed with a lot of touring. On average, I'm doing 150 concerts a year all over North America and a few in Ireland every year. And, you know, it's just that life is complicated and busy for all of us, and trying to sort the logistics of working with various musicians I really wanted on the project and coordinating our respective touring schedules took some effort and took some time. But, you know, in the end, I was really delighted with how cohesive the project felt start to finish. And again, I have to credit Charlie Pilzer for, you know, bringing a certain continuity from an engineering standpoint to things that were recorded occasionally at different times and in different places, and you know, sort of bringing it all into a common place. And the joy of modern digital technology is that we can do that. You know, I can record French horns in one studio and record strings in another studio and record some of the vocals in yet another studio and bring them all together and make them all work together. And then there were some other times when we had, you know, multiple musicians in the studio simultaneously and were able to record some things, in essence, live. So it was just a great combination of effort, many people, but I was grateful that so many people were willing to honor the vision that I put forth about this record and help me get there.
And the delicate side of the financing of music, I mean, you know, gone are the days where, you know, we talk about some of the great bands of the 60s and 70s, and, you know, you had a label behind you that was willing to put the money up to record. I mean, you really have to try and make sure that you can pull the money together to before you can really get in the studio, don't you?
Absolutely. So there was ongoing fundraising for this, and part of the fact that I, you know, spread it out over 2.5 years meant that I was not trying to come up with everything I needed all at once. I could do it, you know, a little bit at a time. But I did an online crowdsourcing fundraising campaign about a year into the record. But before that, you know, I wanted to have something tangible to show and share with people before I did any kind of public ask for support. That I had been pre-selling. I had little order forms that I take to concerts, and I would pre-sell copies. People could basically subscribe to the record, and then they'd get it whenever it was done. And, you know, it's often the way, you know, the community and public radio stations function as well, you know, where they get listeners to support what they're doing. You know, that's kind of, I sort of think of myself as a listener supported artist, because truly there's very little large, you know, music industry money going into acoustic and folk, and particularly folk that leans toward, you know, issues of progressive social consciousness. You know, there's it's not the most profitable end of the music industry. So I have been blessed to cultivate over the last 20 years a fan base that, you know, is willing to respond when I ask. And, you know, I think the trick is that you don't ask any one person for much. You just ask a bunch of people for a little bit. And that too, financially becomes a bit of a barn raising, just as much as the artistic effort does.
And you mentioned, obviously, having something to share. When you write songs, do you find it easy to come up with the material? I always love to ask the question, you know, how you actually go about writing a song. Can you take us through that process?
You know, for me, it's different with every song, but usually there is some story that has really clobbered me over the head that I want to tell, or some personal experience that I feel a genuine need to give voice to and expression to. And then the question is, how do you do that in a way that makes it acceptable to someone? You know, how do you create a song that has meaning for many people rather than just a journal entry that is therapeutic personally, that doesn't transcend personal experience? And so, you know, some songs really carry deep personal meaning, but sometimes are just vague enough in the way that they're expressed that many people can access them and have their own interpretation. Other songs, like the song about Pete Seeger, are very specific kind of historic narrative, you know, that really reach into fact and reach into history. And I do research on those songs. There's another one on this record that is about the Shoah, about the Holocaust. And that involves probably between, I would say, 100 and 120 hours of research on my part, listening to and watching interviews and conducting personal interviews with survivors and children of survivors. And, you know, like, it just felt really important to get that right and do the research. But the process itself usually begins with a melody and an emotion. And then I try and figure out what the chord structure is under the melody. And sometimes it's immediately evident. And sometimes, you know, you play with a little bit to create more nuance. And then it usually comes with a couple of words. And then I spend the rest of the time really trying to figure out how to tell the story I've set myself to telling in a way that both serves the story and fits into the melody that I've created. Because for me, the melody and chord changes, the music, are really what define the emotion of a thing. And this became very clear to me recently when I was introduced to a heavy metal singer in a band called Disturbed. And they have recorded a version of Simon and Garfunkel's Sound of Silence. And I never realized what an incredibly poignant song that was and how socially relevant it was, perhaps even more so now than when it was written, until I heard one singer who was an extraordinary singer and chooses to sing with the kind of vehemence of a heavy metal singer at times for dramatic purpose, but he can also sing beautifully in a you know, more conventional way. And there's no harmonies on his version. The first thing I noticed is that I was missing the harmonies. And then I realized, oh no, because I'm not getting lost in the harmonies, I'm really hearing the words, and I'm hearing the power of the words in relationship to the melody and the chord changes. So that was a real lesson for me as a songwriter, to note that sometimes you can obscure what you've created if you have too many other things on it. And so intentionally on this record, there are songs that there are no harmonies on. There's no background vocals. The arrangements are fairly simple, fairly sparse. It's, you know, voice, guitar, and piano, for instance. Or, you know, there are ways for all of the places where I did engage in using orchestral instruments
Yeah, I love the amount of thought that goes into this. Do you give workshops on songwriting? Is that something you're now doing? Because I can, you know, just listening to you talk about the way that you build a song and, you know, and thinking about the material, I'm obviously imagine it's something that would be a great benefit to other people, you know, working on their own careers.
I do songwriting workshops. I would love to do more of them as time moves forward. You know, I think there's a natural... there's a natural process in the arts in particular where there's only so much you can learn in the academy. There's only so much you can learn by studying, and really you learn a great deal by doing. And now after 20 years of being on the road full time and, you know, 14 or 15 records that I have released, and, you know, I feel like I really now have a depth of perspective that's potentially useful for people. But that's often how it is in the arts. We start out when we're younger and we focus on doing a thing. And then I think just as you have to learn how to play an instrument, or you have to learn how to perform and deliver a song with heart and soul and sincerity, I think pedagogy is its own process. You know, I think you learn how to teach, and I'm delighted that over the last 10 years I've had the opportunity to lead enough workshops and spend enough time, you know, guiding other people in their process, but I now feel like I have figured out also how to teach. But you know, it has its own learning curve, as any teacher will tell you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, certainly does. We're going to take a break with another song. Now, you know, we were talking about some of the other songs you've written, and, you know, the stories that they have in them. The song we've picked to play now, though, is Everybody Sings the Blues, which... It's a lighthearted song, but I think also has a message. I mentioned, I think, in the beginning, and one of the things I love about your songs is the fact that you have a way of talking about challenges in life, but also allowing the hope to shine through. Talk a little bit about this song.
You know, Everybody Sings the Blues definitely came out of a lot of years involved in studying Buddhist teaching and Buddhist philosophies and ideas, and the idea that we usually create more difficulty in our lives when we try and avoid suffering than when we just accept it as one of many states of existence and trust that it will pass. And I think we live in Western culture in general, you know, not unique just to the United States or to Canada, but in Western culture in general, we have arrived at a place where there are so many opportunities to avoid, you know, awareness of our own suffering or that of others. And sometimes I think, you know, it's important to recognize that, you know, we all find ourselves at the crossroads of suffering and transcendence many times, and we have a choice. We have a choice whether we choose to focus on the suffering, whether we choose to focus on what it means to transform that into something useful. And so for me, certainly music has always been one of those tools for transforming suffering into something more transcendent, while not, you know, trying to blow smoke up somebody's skirt and pretend that, you know, life is all peachy keen and great. You know, like, we have to acknowledge the difficulties as well. So when I sat down to write this song, I kind of imagined in my head what would happen if Ray Charles and Dr. Seuss had gotten together for a songwriting session. What would have come out of that? And that was the beginning point for this song. And what came out was Everybody Sings the Blues.
Well, I love the idea behind the song. And it's great. It's actually the final song on the album. Not the final song we're going to play today. But let's play that just now. This is Joe Jenks from the album Poets, Philosophers, Workers and Wanderers. And this is Everybody Sings the Blues. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
Well, I may not be the smartest man that ever walked on earth, and some of what's gone well for me might be an accident of birth. Oh, but deep inside the mystery surrounding me and you is something I have come to know and hold is deeply true. Well, you may be a woman from the right side of town. Going out evenings in the finest of gowns. All but one thing's for certain, no matter the shoes, sooner or later everybody sings the blues. You may be erudite or a real cool cat, a high-priced jet setter, going this way and that. All but one thing's for certain, you know it ain't news. Sooner or later, everybody sings the blues. Just another day, and hope that you get through. Ironic, you may be a clown, and you may swear that you will never wear your smile upside down. Oh, but one thing's for certain, whether you win or lose, sooner or later, everybody sings the blues. One thing's for certain, you know it ain't news. Sooner or later, everybody sings the blues. Sooner or later, everybody sings the blues.
That's Joe Jenks with Everybody Sings the Blues from his great new album, Poets, Philosophers, Workers and Wanderers. And I cannot recommend this album enough. Lovely packaging, as I've mentioned earlier, some great songs. And if you've been listening to this conversation through, you'll know that very inspirational. I think that that's wonderful that you managed to weave in. Again, I mentioned the word hope. I think that certainly in the challenging times we're going through, I think having some hope that, you know, we can discover a better future is really important. So I want to really thank you for that today.
Oh, thank you, Jen. It's, you're absolutely welcome. I think hope is a very powerful ally, and hope is different than distraction. You know, I think a lot of people mistake the two. I think a lot of people, you know, just engage in behaviors of avoidance. But hope is I don't know, staring it down, you know, looking at the things that are difficult and saying, no, we are going to transform this. It is possible to make a difference. And sometimes that difference is very simple. Sometimes that difference is just a small act of kindness to another person, or a gracious word to a clerk at a grocery store or in a bank. You know, the way that we treat each other, even in situations where we have grown accustomed to a certain kind of anonymity and you know, disengagement, I think can really change the tone of someone's day. And so, I really think small acts of kindness contribute to hopefulness. And for me, music is inherently a hopeful activity, creating music, listening to music, being connected to it. And so it's always been my drug of choice, for sure, is to create music and be a part of facilitating others creating music, because I think it brings something beautiful into the world. And when we talk about live performance, it's a whole different universe, because, in its recorded form, what we're really trying to do in some ways is capture the power of live performance. But it's always different in recorded form. And in live performance, we create these sonic sculptures in the air that sort of dissipate as soon as they've been created. They exist in the present time alone. And as a result of that, I think it calls everyone's attention, both the players and the musicians on stage and the audience, into the moment in a way that is, in fact, transcendent. It's what the Buddhist masters have been talking about for 2,500 years, is that when we bring our attention into the present moment, where we're not worrying about tomorrow and we're not, wrestling with yesterday, but we're just in the moment, that's when we transcend suffering.
That's a perfect way to segue into the live experience. I mean, you play live solo. You're also a member of Brother Sun with Pat Wichter and Greg Greenway. Tell us a little bit about the live experience. And I know you've been playing with Brother Sun for quite a while now, and you may be taking a break from that. Is that right?
That's true. The trio Brother Sun is going to wind down at the end of 2017 in mid-November. And we are going on indefinite hiatus. I don't think any of us have ruled out the possibility of future collaboration, but, we're all eager to, I think in some ways take some of the lessons we have learned in, now 7.5 years of making music together as an ensemble, and apply those lessons in other ways, and pursue other collaborative processes with other players and other writers. And, there's also a personal element to our choice to, go on hiatus for a while as a trio, in that everything you say yes to is necessarily something that you say no to. And for the years that we have been really devoted to the trio and on the road heavily with the trio, all of us have had to say no, not just to other professional opportunities, but to people that matter a great deal to us in our personal lives, to spouses and siblings and parents and nieces and nephews. None of us have children, but all three of us are deeply connected to our families. I think you just come to an awareness at different times in your life that you have served one portion of your life mission well while neglecting other portions of that life mission. And so I think we all kind of slowly came to an awareness that even though the music we were making was something we really enjoyed and something clearly our fan base enjoyed, that we were, all of us, in some ways not serving other purposes in our life that required our attention.
So you'll be playing shows with Brother Sun, as you mentioned, through the rest of this year, and then you'll be on hiatus. But tell us a little bit about the solo side. And most of the time, are you solo on the road by yourself, or do you tend to travel with other people?
It's sort of all over the map, and when I say that, I don't mean that just figuratively. It really depends on what part of the country or what part of the continent or what part of the world I'm in. I have musical friends all over North America, and so in different places, sometimes they'll invite different players to join me. Many times I'm just traveling solo. And I started out touring solo just almost 20 years ago. I was based out of Seattle, Washington at the time, and was just really on for a great adventure, and enjoyed various little bits of collaboration over the years, in particular with Greg and Pat, which is part of how the three of us ended up forming a trio. But after 7.5 years of having the majority of my efforts go into trio work, I'm pleased to get back to doing a lot more solo work, and I'll be touring in between Brother Sun concerts this year. I'll be doing a fair amount of touring in 2017 as a soloist, including a tour swing up through Ontario in September. So it's, I'm excited about all the possibilities. And there are things you can do as a soloist. You can change a set list in a heartbeat and nobody cares. You know, you can respond to something in the room with a different song than you intended to play, because that's what the moment calls for. With an ensemble where you have really worked on the arrangements and worked on, you know, everything that goes into it and worked on the narrative that you're telling collectively over the arc of an evening, it's much harder to deviate from that scripted set list, because that's something everybody has, you know, brought certain instruments on stage for and put them in certain tunings for. And, you know, like it becomes more difficult to respond with a certain kind of immediacy to what's going on. And, so in a time when there's so much political craziness and shifting happening daily, you know, for me, it's always a treat to stand on stage on my own and have the opportunity to respond, you know, to the world around me in a little more immediate way. And that said, I will absolutely miss singing the amazing harmonies that I get to sing with my bandmates. And so at some point, you know, we may all decide, oh, we really miss that. And, you know, we'll go back to it. But for now, I think we're all left facing other muses for a while after this year. And you know, everything has its end, as Pete Seeger wrote. So,
absolutely.
Quoting Ecclesiastes, you know. So.
Well, you know, and the nice thing, as you said, you know, nothing is final, and that, you know, this is a hiatus. You've got the opportunity of exploring the wonderful collaboration you've had with Brother Sun again, but also, you know, looking at other collaborations, or as you say, and particularly in, you know, one of the great things about live music, which is why we all love it, is the fact that things happen in the moment and they can be very, very special. So I wanted to thank you for spending time to talk to us today. If people want to learn more about your music, how can they do that?
The first and best way to do that is to go to joejanks.com. That's spelled joejenckx.com. I also have a musician page on Facebook, and people can hop over and take a look at that. But joejanks.com is probably the first and best stop. And if people want to sign up for the newsletter, there's a little thing up in the upper right-hand corner they can click on and sign up for the newsletter. And I send out a monthly newsletter ostensibly, but sometimes my monthly newsletter only goes out 9 times a year. So, you know, I don't harass people with it, but it just will keep folks aware of where I'm touring. And as I mentioned, I do tour all over North America. That's probably the best way to stay in touch with me.
And I have a sense that that's a newsletter that people will definitely want to read. So thanks again for being with us. We're going to play one more song. I'm going to get you to introduce it, but I'm going to have you tell us about it first. And that is the song, it's the end of the interview, Going Home. Tell us a little bit about this song.
This song had multiple inspirations. A dear friend of mine with whom I had done a lot of theater in college chose to end his life in 2009. And that really hit me. We grew up expecting to bury our elders, but when we get to a place where we begin to bury our peers, you know, it brings our own mortality into a little bit of a different light. And in this case, a little more tragic light, because a dear friend was not able to transcend the difficulties he found in being alive and on this plane of existence. I then, about 6 months later, got word that a dear songwriter friend who was in Afghanistan had been killed, and it turned out it was inaccurate information. He was okay, but that night, the thought of losing two brothers in song in such a short period of time just really hit me, and I realized that what I was most sad about was that I would no longer get new stories from these two gentlemen. And I always felt like my life was enhanced by looking at the world through the lens of their perspective and the things that they created. It turned reality a few degrees off from the way I saw it and allowed me to see from a different angle. And I began to think about the kinds of things that they would respectively write about. You know, it really came back to this idea of people standing at the crossroads of suffering and transcendence. And so this song, Going Home, is kind of a litany, if you will, of many, many people in different moments of decision and struggle and challenge, and ultimately ends on a very hopeful and transcendent note. But It's just it's sort of a collage and a portrait of many people who are standing at that crossroads and you know, trying to determine what happens next and what does it mean to go home? Can you go home, or is home something that's static, or is home something that you create fresh every day? Home is where you are. And I think as a touring artist, I've had to come to a place where home is not a prescripted place that I land. Home is a way of being. And, you know, when you transcend the place and figure out how to be at home in your own skin, wherever you happen to be, I think that's when you've really begun to touch into the kind of thing that a lot of the great spiritual masters have talked about for, you know, thousands of years.
That's a great way to put it. Lots to think about. Fabulous album, Joe Jenks, Poets, Philosophers, Workers, and Wanderers. It's an album you definitely want to check out. Joe, it's an absolute pleasure talking to you today. And you're going to introduce the final song on Folk Roots Radio.
All right. This is Going Home from Poets, Philosophers, Workers, and Wanderers. Thanks for having me, Jen.
Thanks again.
Thanks to Folk Roots Radio for doing this great programming.
Thanks again. You have a great day.
You too.
A song for the sailor lost out to sea, a song for the mother who always will grieve, a song for the soldier who lays down his life, a song for the woman who once was his wife. A song for the traveler down on his luck, a circus man plying his trade for a buck, a song for the child who's lost in the night, though she's never seen stars, she still clings to their light. Going home, going home. Mistress who dares to believe, wiping the tears from her eyes with her sleeve, a song for the poet who runs out of time before she can finish her famous last, a song for the miner who digs out the cold, dreams of a life somewhere far from this hole, a song for the rebel who gave up the fight, haunted by guilt, 'cause he still knows he's right. Going home, going home. Lovers who never will meet, star-crossed and stumbling out on the street, a song for the preacher down on his knees, praying for answers he never quite sees, a song for the ones who run into the fire to put out the flames of this world out its pyre, a song for the driver who runs out of with nobody there to help shoulder the load. Going home, going home. Thank you. A song for the drinker who puts down the glass. A song for the jumper who takes a step back. A song for the wanderer home now at last. A song for redemption from sins of the past. A song for forgiveness that opens a door. A song for the good friends who gather once more. A song for the prisoner finally free. A song for the veil that is lifted, lifted, lifted. Going home. Going home. Going home. Going home. Who yearns for the trance? A song for the beggar, a song for the thief, a song for the hunger that has no relief, a song for the baby who sleeps until dawn, a song for the birds that will sing on and on, a song for the sunrise.